The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
In the next few minutes, I'd like to finish off Keter. Finish off Keter. Isn't that easy? Okay. Won't be a problem. So just as kind of just get ourselves running, just a little rewind before we go forward. So we're talking about the various powers in our lives, which are expressions of Hashem's powers that Hashem shares with us. And the root of all powers is Keter, is the crown. And so far what we've established is how Keter is the ultimate self, how Keter is ultimate freedom, and Keter is mastery, Keter is the ultimate mystery, it's the source of unconditional love. And rooted in Keter is what's called the 13 attributes of mercy, of compassion, that we say, Hashem, Hashem, Kilrachum v'chanun, right? And that's when we're really reaching out beyond logic, beyond the rules. And the question is, you know, we've been talking about, well, how do we cultivate our connection to Hashem as He is so manifest through this power, this attribute called Keter. And there's one point here that is really critical in terms of how one does that. So this is a story in the Talmud, page 25 of Ta'anit. And quoted there is a verse from Psalms that says, "Bring my soul out of prison, that I may give thanks unto you, your name. The righteous shall crown you because of me, because you will deal bountifully with me." So the psalmist here is praying that something happen in his life which will inspire people to, so to speak, crown Hashem, to recognize Hashem's absolute, infinite, unbridled mastery and free choice. So this is the story. The story is, once Rabbi Eliezer came before the Ark and recited the 24 blessings said on a fast day. Right? But his prayer was not answered. There was a drought, and they were praying for rain. Rabbi Akiva then came before the Ark and exclaimed, "Our father, our king, Avinu Malkeinu, Ein Lanu Melech Eliata, our father, our king, we have no king but you. Our father, our king, have mercy upon us for your own sake." Say, Laman Shemecha, do it for your sake. And rain fell. So this is a bracket. Whenever you have a bracket in here, it's like the what's between the lines. Naturally, all assembled assumed that Rabbi Akiva was greater than Rabbi Eliezer, for he was answered. So Rabbi Eliezer's praying 24 prayers, 24 blessings, and no rain. Rabbi Akiva gets down and says, two sentences, start the pour. So people present, it was probably very embarrassing to Rabbi Eliezer, like, well, what's the deal here? So a bat kol, which is a divine voice, the people hear. And there are various places that we have this revelation of a bat kol literally means of a daughter voice. Right? There's some divine revelation. Says, announce, not because this one is greater than that one, but because this one is a forgiving person. And that's not exactly what it says in Hebrew. It says exactly, passes over his measures. Ma'avir amidotav. Passes over his measures or his attributes. Midotav. Whereas that one is not a forgiving person, and there it also says ma'avir amidotav. So the question is, how is it that Rabbi Akiva was able to so open the gates of heaven right? And create the space for the revelation of God's complete mastery for rain to come in the world. Because he was a forgiving person. If you want to have made manifest in your life Hashem's compassion beyond reason, Hashem's unconditional love beyond all conditions, then you have to model that very same attribute, right? As we've mentioned all the way. For this truth of Hashem to come into our lives, we have to acknowledge it, but not just simply philosophically. We have to acknowledge it in our daily practice, in our own relationships. And so, if we want the revelation of Hashem's crown, his complete mastery, then we have to emulate that too, knowing that we too are an extension, expression of him. And so, what does it mean that Rabbi Akiva was mavir midotav? So one understanding is he's forgiving. Right? And I heard, remember a story of Rav Shlomo Kalbach. And someone I know saw this. Someone, you know, Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach was, for some people, a little bit of a controversial personality. And there were not a few people that disliked him. There are plenty of people who liked him, and there are plenty of people who did not like him, because they felt that he wasn't really so religious and that he was compromising in halacha. So one day, a friend of mine was with Rav Shlomo, and a fellow came up to Rav Shlomo and began to just make him over the coals. Just say the worst horrible things to Rav Shlomo about who he is and what he does, and just like, you know, gave it to him. Gave him a piece of his mind. Right? And Rav Shlomo just looked at him and he says, look, you know, thank you, brother. And just went away and did not respond. Right? So my friend was standing there and he saw that. I said, Shlomo, how do you let that happen? This guy just says the worst things to you in such hurtful words. And you just say nothing. And you just so lovingly, you know, acknowledge and thank him for his clarifications. And go on. So he says, you know, holy brother, I said, brother, if I want Hashem to forgive me, then I have to be forgiving. Right? I can't expect of Hashem to treat me in a different way than I'm treating other people. Right? And so, if we want the supernatural, if we want an expression, a manifestation of the unconditional love of Hashem that overrides, surpasses, right? His attributes, God's attribute of justice. As we learn in the Zohar, just above that, 28. It says, his love for his children overpowered his love for justice. And that's what I shared with you about Pesach. Right? Pesach, Hashem passed over his attribute of judgment. They didn't deserve it. And one of the understandings is, why did the Jews have to put blood on their doorpost? Right? And if you read in the Megillah, not the Megillah, in the Haggadah, it says that Hashem himself came into Egypt and saved the Jewish people, not an angel. Why does it say that? Because an angel could not have saved the Jewish people. Because angels have to play by the rules. Only the king doesn't have to play by the rules. So Hashem himself came in to take the Jewish people out. And it says he saw the blood in their doorpost and he passed over. What, Hashem needs signs to know where the Jews living? Right? That just sounds ridiculous. What's the point of this idea? But some commentaries say that the blood was not on the outside of the door, but it was on the inside of the door. Because who needed to see the blood? It was the Jewish people. The Jewish people had to put that blood as a sign of their belief that even though I know that I don't deserve it, Hashem will take me out of this place. Because his love for his children overrides and passes over his love for justice. He is ma'avir al midotav. Hashem passes over his attributes. Right? And there's an incredible midrash that says the word Pesach means to also straddle. And that, so to speak, Hashem straddled the door of the Jews, because the Melech HaMavis, the angel of death, came to the doors of the Jews. And Hashem stopped him. Right? It's an incredible midrash. You know, only over my dead body, so to speak. So, and there's another amazing midrash that said, why is it that the Jewish people put blood on their doorpost? So the midrash, your old tradition, says this is analogous to a butcher who is going to slaughter his sheep. So he puts a red mark on the sheep that are designated for slaughter. What's wrong with this midrash? This midrash doesn't make any sense. The midrash is saying that this is analogous, the Jewish people putting blood on the door is analogous to a butcher who puts a red mark on those sheep or those cattle, whatever, that he's going to slaughter. Doesn't make sense. The Jews should have then put blood on the Egyptians' doorpost.
Too many doorposts.
Too many doorposts, right. So that's the midrash. The midrash is saying that the Jewish people have to look at that blood and say, I know I'm marked for death. And even so, Hashem will pass over my home. So that's the idea. The idea is, how does one invite that kind of relationship with Hashem? By having that kind of relationship with Hashem and having that kind of relationship with people. So this is the famous story about Aaron. And on the most incredible day of the inauguration of the tabernacle, who dies? His two sons. And what does it say about Aaron? V'yidom Aaron. And Aaron was quiet. So Rav Soloveitchik has a fabulous understanding of that. He says, you know, what was the power of Aaron? He was quiet. He was quiet. He says, there's so many things that we do, and Hashem is quiet, right? That we really deserved. And we didn't get what we deserved. And Hashem was quiet, right? And so when things happen that you don't so much like what Hashem does, and it doesn't fit into your way of thinking, so you be quiet. Right? You be quiet. I remember a friend and I, we were driving through a neighborhood. It was a terrible neighborhood somewhere in the United States. And it's a neighborhood of drug and crime, prostitution. We're trying to drive through this as fast as possible because we just bought some drugs. So we were trying to get through this as fast as possible. So my friend turns to me and says, I am so impressed with God. I got to hand it to God. I'm thinking, what is he talking about? I said to him, what do you see here that in any ways inspires you to praise Hashem and say you have to hand it to him? He says, because if I was God, I'd have wiped out planet Earth a long time ago. You know, when you walk through a place like this and it's still around, whoa, is God patient? Oh my gosh, how patient Hashem is when you look at the world that we're in and what people do to themselves, to each other, to God. Right? And that's Keter. Keter is also called Erech HaPayim. Erech HaPayim is patience. Long suffering. We think we're suffering. The skin of Hashem, how much he's suffering, waiting for us to get our acts together. And so, if we want that kind of yachas, if we want that kind of relationship with Hashem, then we have to be giving Hashem that kind of relationship. And just as we want sometimes Hashem to pass over his measures, his standards, right? His standard protocol in the name of unconditional love, then we have to exercise that too towards Hashem. And when something happens that really makes no sense to me, and I have every right to be angry, what an opportunity, I will be silent. And I will accept Hashem with total love. That's a high level. Right? That's a high level. And so too with other people. They anger me. And I have no reason to forgive them. Right? I have no reason to be good to them. I have every reason to demand from them X, Y, Z. And I will pass over my standards, my protocol. And in that way, we make a space for Keter, for Hashem as manifest, as the unconditional lover, beyond all boundaries, mysterious, absolute free choice. Whatever the king wants, he gets. If he wants it, he can have it. And so, Rabbi Akiva was an incredibly forgiving man. And obviously, Rabbi Yasser wasn't, so Rabbi Akiva was able to open up that gate, so to speak. He had the key. He was the key. And Rabbi Yasser couldn't do it. Right? But what's disturbing about this Gemara is it doesn't make any sense. Because everyone standing there were pretty shocked. And I'm sure Rabbi Yasser didn't look so great. And after all his prayers, nothing happened, and in a few words, right? Rabbi Akiva was answered. But the Batkol says, don't think this one's greater than that one. What do you mean, don't think? It seems obvious that this one is greater than that one. So one of the understandings is, which I've written down here from a Hasidic book called The Be'er Moshe, is he explains, in fact, let's read it a little bit. If Rabbi Akiva was answered, is he not greater? How is it possible that the Batkol, the divine voice, would say something derogatory about Rabbi Eliezer? It's not possible Hashem would say something derogatory about Rabbi Eliezer, right? It's not possible. So if something were to happen like this and rain come down, Hashem knows he's embarrassing. Rather, Rabbi Eliezer prayed according to the attributes of God. He wanted to arouse God's passion, compassion over his judgment. But the legal suit and accusations against the people was too great for that to succeed. Rabbi Akiva took another approach and prayed to him and bypassed his attributes beyond the order of justice, appealed straight to the king, Keter. Therefore, he said, we have no king but you. As it says in Kohelet, for the king's word rules supreme. Who can tell him what to do? In other words, since you are king, you are our king, you do not have to take in consideration the normative procedures. And this is what's written in the Gemara Psachim. The king breaks through the borders to make way for himself, and no one can stop him. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva is not greater than Rabbi Eliezer. He just took a different approach. Right? In other words, according to the Be'er Moshe, what is the meaning he was ma'avir al midotav? Whose attributes did he bypass? So generally people read it, his attributes. That Rabbi Akiva was a man that would bypass his own attributes, his own standards, his own protocol, and was very forgiving, right? And Rabbi Eliezer wasn't. That's the general way people understand this. But the Be'er Moshe is giving us a much better understanding of this. It's not his own attributes he bypassed. He bypassed God's attributes. Right? And Rabbi Eliezer, went through protocol. The protocol. And he asked that Hashem's compassion overcome his justice. Right? But he asked for compassion, which is still one of the attributes. But what you didn't realize is the situation's so bad, right, that you had to cut through all protocol. And Rabbi Akiva took a different approach and just simply said, Ein lanu melech ela ata. And the more a person believes, I have no other king, no other ruling power, there is no other power that reigns over me, and really believes that, then miracles come into their lives. Right? And so it's not that Rabbi Eliezer was better than Rabbi Akiva, he just didn't realize that he had to go ahead and do that. Now I ask you, why not just always do that? Right? Well, it's because there's a reason why Hashem created protocol. Okay? And there's a reason why sometimes you gotta break the protocol and go straight to the king and appeal. Not to the Supreme Court. Because even the Supreme Court has to play by the rules. Right? But you appeal to the very creator of judgment at all, who came up with all this protocol in the first place. Do you get that point? So that's why it says over here in the next page, I brought a verse from Deuteronomy. It says, "For what nation is there so great who has God so close to them as the Lord our God in all things that we call upon Him for?" So the Be'er Moshe, again a Hasidic book, explains, the Arizal explains, what does it mean that we call upon Him for? Him and not to His attributes. Alright? In other words, didn't put the words, even when Israel has angels prosecuting against them, even then Hashem is compassionate towards them in that He aroused the will which is Keter. In other words, we go straight to the king. Right? We don't talk to anybody. Right? We go straight to the king because we know that the king can deal with this. And cut through the protocol. And so that's what it means that it was Ma'avir al Midotav. He went straight and went past it all. And because of that, he was able to do that. So that's how we receive and that's how we generate a greater receptivity to Hashem's compassion, unconditional love, absolute mastery, complete freedom, total mystery, total irrational response when we're that way. Right? When we're that way. Okay. They say that really the splitting of the sea was in the merit of Joseph's bones. Merit of Joseph. Interesting Midrashim. Joseph? What is it about Joseph? Because Joseph was this young boy who's being seduced by his master's wife. And the Midrash describes her form of seduction. She would be changing her clothing every, I can't remember, hour or half an hour. She was just trying so hard to get this boy in bed with her. Right? And it says in the Torah that he came back to the house. And the oral tradition said he came back to be with her. Right? And at that moment, right, he's about to go to bed with his master's wife, and suddenly he sees the image of his father, and he stops and he runs out. She's got his clothing in her hands, which means he had already stripped. Right? So what did he do? He transcended himself. And therefore, in the merit of him transcending himself, imagine a young boy all by himself in Egypt, and this attractive, wealthy woman has been constantly, for days and days, seducing this boy, and he's right about to do it. And at that moment, he tapped into such incredible freedom, right? And stopped and ran out without his clothing on, right? So in the merit of his ability to transcend himself, the sea split. So that's the exercise of our lives. Which is every day there's an opportunity, l'avir al midotav, to pass over your traits, to pass over your shtick, and to transcend and demonstrate that you share God's crown and demonstrate mastery. And when you do that, more of Hashem's mastery becomes manifest in our lives. And we just see incredible miracles in our lives. Okay. Last piece, and then we're going to move towards Chachma. The last thing I want you to know is that Keter is the ultimate ecstasy in our lives. The ultimate pleasure of our lives is in fact mastery. Because bottom line, we all want to feel good about ourselves. And the key to that is very different than what most people do. Most people think they are going to go treat themselves. And just unbridled, right, lust. Just do what I want, where I want, how I want, right? And I'm just going to be free and happy. And the irony of that is how unhappy these people are. At the beginning, they're happy, right? Life is a party. Life is a beach, Right? And I just, you know, a bohemian lifestyle. And I do not restrain my eyes, whatever my eyes lay their interest upon. And yet, interestingly enough, those are the people who over time lose self-respect. Because the essence of self is freedom. And not just freedom to do what anything I want to do, right? But the freedom to do something that's befitting who I am, right? And my holiness, my greatness, that's real freedom. Not to treat myself like an animal. And that's what I shared with you about Esav. Esav was a wild man. He was a total wild man. He just did what he wanted. Right? He lived a total life of freedom. And yet when he comes home and he says, "Brother, what's that red stuff poured down my throat?" And he says, "I'm tired." And we learned that Rashi said he was exhausted from raping and killing and stealing that day. Because basically, Esav was depressed. He was depressed. And when Yaakov says, "Well, okay, only if you give me your birthright." So he says, "Well, I've been to Israel." No, he says, "Only if you give me my birthright, your birthright." So he says, "Well, what do you want my birthright for? What is that?" The Midrash says that there's this discussion going on. So he says, "Hey, bro, what's with the birthright thing? Like, what do you want my birthright for?" So the Midrash says that Yaakov begins to share with them that in the future there will be a Beit HaMikdash, and that will be working in the Beit HaMikdash, the firstborn, which was originally the plan, but later on, right, the Kohanim got it. And then he began to share with them some of the laws, some of the restraints, right, of a Kohen. If he walks in, his hair is all messed up, punishable by death. If he goes in there and he's had a couple of drinks, punishable by death. So that's why it says in the verse, Esav says to Yaakov, "I'm going to die." What do you mean, "I'm going to die"? Because according to his Midrash, he said, "I'm not going to, this is not a Torah of life, this is a Torah of death. With all these restraints and all these laws, it'd be horrible. I don't want that." Right? Who wants a life like that? With such restrictions. And again, Judaism is a difficult religion to sell. Because we're not in a world that likes restrictions. We're in a world that loves freedom. So why would I embrace a life of restriction? And why would Yaakov want such a thing? Because Yaakov realized that life is about freedom. And the freedom to do, and the freedom not to do. The freedom to express, and the freedom to restrain. And that would be a higher form of freedom, a higher form of love and life, a great sense of mastery. And so, basically, Esav sold his birthright for beans. He sold eternity for beans. He sold his opportunity to actualize his godliness for beans. And so do most people today. They sell out their self-worth. I have a friend. He asked a group of young adults. He asked them how much would they feel they need to know somebody before they lend them their car. Right? It's a very serious thing. Entrust someone with my car. I really want to know this person. I mean, I would really want to know this person. He then asked them, "And tell me, how much do you feel you need to know someone to entrust them with your body sexually?" "Well, I met her in a bar." You know, you meet a person in a bar, you give them your car? "No, but my body for sure." Right? What happened to your self-respect? Don't you realize what you're doing to yourself in the long run? Maybe in the short run? But in the long run, what is that? But that's the point. Discipline nurtures self-respect. Discipline is the epitome of freedom. Right? Not just wild going all over the place. Right? That's real freedom. And so that's the ultimate joy. So in this particular piece from Shabbat, it says, in Gemara Shabbat 88, when the Jewish people stood at Sinai, and Hashem said, you want my Torah, what did the Jewish people say? Naseh v'nishma. We will do, and we will listen. Right? That sounds a little crazy, because if somebody, you know, if somebody is going to offer you this whole list of commandments, you would probably want to know what's in it first. Which is exactly what the Midrash says all the other nations did. But Hashem said, you know, do you want my Torah? And they said, well, what's in it? And Hashem said, well, don't have adulterous relationships. And they went, ooh, that's going to be a bit of a problem. That's just part of our favorite pastime. So we couldn't do that. And basically, the other nations asked what's in it, right, and decided that they'd pass on it. Jewish people said, Naseh v'nishma. What is the power of Naseh v'nishma? So the Gemara says that when they said Naseh v'nishma, angels descended and placed two crowns upon the head of each and every Jew. One paralleled we will do, and the other unparalleled we will hear. These crowns were removed later after Israel worshipped the golden calf, but will be restored in the future. As it's written in Isaiah, God's redeemed will return and enter Zion with joyous song and everlasting joy on their heads. Why is joy on their heads? So the Gemara is obviously saying that crown equals joy, and at Sinai they got the crown, but then they lost the crown. And we're going back towards when we will have that crown, and that crown will be ultimate joy. Now why? How did they get the crown? Because what's the crown? Unconditional love. Unconditional love. So, if they would have said, well, let's hear what's in it, and we'll think about it. Right? So then that would be not an act of unconditional love. If somebody asks you, could you do me a favor? And then you say, well, what is it? It hurts, you know, when you ask somebody to do you a favor and they say, well, what is it? They should first say, for sure. Now, what is it? No, he said, for sure, because I love you. And I'll do it just because you want me to do it. And it doesn't have to make any sense to me. If you want me to do it, I'll do it. And therefore, that was the crown. Because since they related to Hashem with unconditional love and a pure act of freedom, an act of freedom that surpassed wisdom, because it makes more sense wisdom-wise to first ask, make sure you can do it, make sure it's not too much for you. You know, use a little chachma first. But they were ma'avira, midotav. They passed protocol. And so Hashem mirrors us. And if I relate to Hashem in unconditional love, then I will experience Hashem's unconditional love in my life too. And if I relate to people with unconditional love, then I open the space for the expression, the manifestation of Hashem, right, as He is so expressed through the truth of Keter. And that is the ultimate joy. Right? The ultimate joy is that freedom. It's that love. It's that mastery. And they got two crowns. One crown for we will do, relating to the do mitzvahs, and we will listen, or we will obey, restrain, referring to the don'ts. Right? And so the crown is in two ways. You've got the mastery to do, and you've got the mastery to restrain and not to do. Okay? And therefore, in Brachot, the last piece here, is what are we heading towards? The world to come. What is the ultimate experience that we're going to have in the world to come? It says, the world to come has no eating, drinking, reproduction, commerce, jealousy, hatred, rivalry. Sounds boring. No, rather, God forbid, rather the righteous sit with their crowns on their head, enjoying the radiance of the divine presence. As it says, and they saw the Lord, and they ate and drank. What's that got to do with it? They saw the Lord and they ate and drank. What did they eat and drink? The vision of the Lord. Right? Seeing God was all I needed. Right? And that's what happens in Olam Haba. The Olam Haba that we're talking about, the big pie, so to speak, the big the grand door prize of living a Jewish life, is living a holy life. Living a God-conscious life. A life whereby one feels so connected to the Creator, the Master of the universe. It's a life where you experience sharing God's crown. Okay. So we're going to take a 5-minute, 10-minute break, and then we're going to start with Chachma.